In sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. We're going to be with you in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free, thanks to our sponsors this week, Ritual and Squarespace. Squarespace! They're bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined this week by a very special co-host, Christian Spicer, out traveling, living it up, enjoying the last shred of summer. But you know her, you love her, one of our favorite recurring guests, Lana Bashinsky is back with me. Hey, Lana.
Hi, Jeff. I'm so excited to be here. And, you know, I love coming in and, you know, I'm glad Christian Spicer's living his life, because then I also get to live his life and be here as a co-host for a little bit. So happy to be here on the long weekend.
Yeah.
Thanks for the invite, bud.
Well, I mean, you are also traveling. You are also not in your home environment. You're enjoying summer. You're traveling, doing some fun things, and yet you accepted the invitation. You're here. You showed up in contrast to my erstwhile co-host.
Yeah, exactly. What I'm trying to say is, Christian, you're great, but
Greater than symbol. Greater than symbol.
You're great, but I'm greater than. Okay. Exactly. Are you with me? Yes, exactly.
So excited to have you with us, and so excited to have our other guest. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata, and this week you're down Lana-able co-host.
Oh, I did not know where you're going with this, but down Lana-able co-host.
I'm so excited because DLC also stands for, once again, Dramedies, leagues, and conventions, because she is an actor, a host, and a gamer. You know her. You've seen her. She's the creator of Good Game on YouTube. One of our favorite guests, Michelle Morrow, is back with us. Hey, Michelle.
Wow, that was such an intro. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm so delighted to have both of you here. Talk games. We got some interesting news, some really fun, exciting news this week, and we got some cool games to talk about. So I also thank you, Michelle, for being here on a long holiday weekend in the United States. Appreciate that.
I mean, we're not really going anywhere.
So yeah, fair enough. Neither am I.
You know, I was like, okay, cool.
Yeah, no, I we had a big, exciting weekend of going into the living room and then going into the kitchen. It was great.
For a walk in the neighborhood. It was amazing.
It's so good. All right, well, let's jump in and start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happen in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. or by visiting our subreddit, that's 5x5dlc.reddit.com, or our Discord, which is also 5x5dlc on the old Discord. Fantastic folks there, cool community. I urge you to take part. I think you'll find it to be delightful. But Michelle, you are our guest. You get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Well, I think were these the Marvel's Midnight Suns gameplay? Is that what we're talking about?
Well, it could be. If that's your choice, I think that's a great one to pick, personally.
I personally think that one, like, that looks like my speed of game for sure. And by the way, that was a really long amount of gameplay that they showed too.
Yeah. Yes, this week we had IGN kind of had their exclusive reveal of the gameplay of Midnight Suns. Last week we were talking about the CG announcement trailer of Midnight Suns, and I got all excited about Firaxis doing a Marvel property and this kind of cool vampiric, you know, Marvel characters, but done in this kind of cool, a different take on the Marvel universe.
Well, and it's like a cool, I mean, it's a card game, you know, so it's got like card-based combat, but it's like a full-on RPG too, where you can, you know, every hero in the game has different abilities and whatever, like you can be defensive or protective, whatever. And there are going to be lots of costumes and whatever. But one of the things they really hone in on is you have these like little side stories that you can do with like the different Avengers. Like you can go like take a walk with Tony Stark and like get to know him better. I just think it's like, I kind of like appreciate the fact that this like RPG card game has like this extra layer of actual like role-playing involved where people can really get into it.
I want to ask you about that because they made a big deal about it. You can go meditate with magic. You can, you know, you can hang out, take a walk with Blade in the, you know, in the garden or whatever. And
that was a Tony Stark. Believe me.
Oh, Tony Stark. You're right.
You're right. Definitely going to be doing that.
Well, so I think it's cool, but my honest question is, how often are you actually going to be doing that? Like, do you think that they're going to create a way where that is actually fun over an extended period of time? Or does it feel like a novelty one-off? Oh, I'll take a walk with Tony Stark. But after that, it's kind of worn off, you know?
Well, I think that you're hitting a particular type of gamer here. Like there are people who really, really, really love role play in their games. Like there's role play servers for MMOs and whatnot. So that is a thing, and that does hit a certain group, but it is not everyone. I think that if they make achievements that go along with it, that might reward you. Like if you unlock X amount of story with Tony Stark, you might get some kind of special card or something like that. So that way you're actually playing the game to earn the items instead of just like purchasing a card pack or whatever, however they kind of monetize this, or if everything comes together at once, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as far as the aesthetic of the game, the sort of the corner of the Marvel universe, I mean, I'm guessing as someone who's a fan of Sylvanas Windrunner, you're down for the sort of darker, you know,
Yeah, it's cool. It's really cool. I also love at the end, they said that the heroes are going to go hang out at the Abbey. So if you're from Los Angeles and you know West Hollywood, that's hilarious. Nobody else knows that. I was like, I just love thinking about all of the Marvel superheroes hanging out at the Abbey.
Yeah, that is true. I didn't catch that.
It's the first thing I thought of. But I also lived in West Hollywood for like 15 years. So.
That's amazing. I love it.
Yeah.
Lana, you know, Michelle brought up this notion of the card-based combat, which I love. I mean, I play tons of games like this. I cover a lot of them on the show, but they're almost all, I mean, there are a lot of games that use card-based combat, but they're almost all indie games. You know, that kind of battle system, and unless it's like a Hearthstone or a real card game, but I mean, role-playing games that use card-based combat, you see that a lot in the indie space, but not in the AAA space. And I think it's rather bold of Firaxis to make a game that uses card-based combat. Are you drawn to that personally? What do you think of the card system? We don't know tons about it, but we saw a little glimpse in the trailer.
So I have a couple thoughts right off the bat. I honestly, I had a crazy busy week before this weekend, so I have not actually seen the trailer, but I love listening to the description about it. First of all, Marvel and card-based combat, I feel like if you were to go back and picture some sort of extravagant 3D, like beautiful, vibrant, like I'm looking at the article that has like these screenshots and things in it.
It's beautiful, right? Like it looks good.
But like my first introduction to Marvel was Marvel cards. There's all these videos of me and my siblings we used to like line up all our Marvel cards on the carpet in the hallway, end to end to end to end. And that was like our whole thing, was taking the Marvel cards. And we made up this game that we called War, where we would like set up dungeons and make them fight each other using their stats on the back. And so this, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is my childhood actually becoming this video game. It's Marvel cards, but it is real life, baby. Let's go.
You know what's fun about it too, is that like, you know, like normally you look at a card-based combat sort of game, but like this really does, it's 3D, you're inside of the game, like the combat is happening with the characters. It's not just like cards get thrown down. It's like, it looks so, it's just so cool because it comes alive. And I think that's, after playing as many card games as I have, I think that's a lot of fun when that happens.
And it also is like, it's really engaging because I feel like, I mean, there's like Yu-Gi-Oh exists because people, this is what they're sort of picturing when they're playing these kind of card games. You know, they're putting down their card and like, okay, the card I'm playing is, I can't think of the, I never actually played Yu-Gi-Oh, but like that dragon card that's like the one, the trap card or whatever. They're picturing this dragon coming out and like decimating their enemies. So actually seeing the visualization of that, I think adds that thematic involvement. But so the part I think is interesting that you mentioned about taking walks. Did either of you play Fire Emblem Three Houses, I think it was called?
I know that game is hugely popular, but I never got into the Fire Emblem games. But yeah,
either. I didn't play it, but my partner, Jeff, played a ton of it. And I watched a lot of it. And there's a weird subsection of the game where there's turn-based combat, but then you also have to go and like take your students to tea. And the way like you take them to tea, you have to like remember what kinds of things they like. You have to conduct yourself with like the right etiquette for each different student. If you do it correctly, then they level up or something. And I was like, this is such a weird part of this game. But it feels to me, by you being like, take a walk with Tony Stark, I'm just picturing that exact kind of Fire Emblem thing where you walk with Tony Stark. And it's like, what do you want to talk about? Technology? Women? Iron Man? And you have to like pick the right thing. And you're like, women. And he's like, that's not me anymore. And it's like, your relationship with Tony is bad. And you don't get to level him up as fast because you don't know his like emotional specs. I'm like excited. Emotional specs.
Man, I think I would like be crushed if that happened. I'd be like, I really failed this role play. I feel like I've been building my whole life to this moment. And he just like shot me down. Yeah. I have like serious emotional issues after that.
I love the Marvel dating sim. I like that idea.
A lot of people would like that.
Yeah, I'm like, that's a different game. It'll be very popular in 2022. Yeah,
so my question for you girls is, which Marvel hero do you want to date? No, I'm kidding.
Tony Stark.
Yeah. The billionaire guy who has a cool suit. Yeah. It is interesting that in this presentation, it was sort of a back and forth, you know, a pseudo interview. I know it was very highly PR managed. It was an actual interview, but it was structured like an interview. And one of the questions was like, are there romance options? And they said specifically, no, it's not romance, but you can become very, very good friends. So I guess
friends and benefits. Yeah,
They're stopping short of Mass Effect, I guess, but I think you're right. Is what I mean to say is that there's an element of maintaining these relationships and having you know rapport with characters that I think could be really fun.
And you could, if they you know make it so that you can get card unlocks that way instead of just like I don't know what their you know monetization is going to be or is it like you just buy it and you get everything or I would imagine that there's like.
Sounds free to play.
Pass that you have to like unlock.
They haven't spoken to that specifically, but I will say that all of the pushback that I've heard, I tweeted out my enthusiasm for the card based battle system, and a lot of the tweets that I got back from people that were skeptical, that was the reason is it's just a way for them to monetize the game, random card packs, et cetera, et cetera. We don't know that's the case. But Michelle, are you worried that they would do that? I mean, you play a lot of Hearthstone. You're kind of used to that. I don't know.
I am. Like, how much money you got today? I think that Hearthstone has sort of incentivized a bit so that if you get achievements or whatnot, you unlock things that will allow you to create. I mean, you still, if you want to have like climb ladders and have it be about rank, which is all Hearthstone really is, then you're going to want to like, you're going to have to spend money, but if you want to like really climb the ladder for the most part, but I hope that games like allow you to be able to earn all of these things without spending all of your time on it. Like, you know, that's, and it's hard because I don't put it past any publisher at this point. Like, I really don't, because a lot of the money, most money, comes from those kinds of things. And you see like how successful it is with mobile games. Like, it's just, it's clearly a huge part of it. They know that mobile is where you make the most because of in-game transactions. So who knows? Like, I would hope not, but let's be real. Like, it's going to happen.
It bums me out that the card mechanic is synonymous with that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the first thing that people think when it comes to cards.
It's very Vegas-y, right? Like, it's...
Yeah, and I understand gambling. It, right? It, you know, it comes from trading card games and even, like, baseball cards. You know, you buy a pack, you don't know what's inside it. That's just been the way cards have been sold since there were cards.
Yeah.
So I get it, but I don't think that's necessarily true. I mean, there's plenty, like I said, plenty of indie games that use cards as the central mechanic for the game and aren't, you know, they don't have a monetization strategy tied to it. It's just part of how the game is played.
Right. So, the game might. Oh, go ahead, Michelle.
Oh, I was just saying, like, they might not have the reach to be able to do such things. Like, for them, they need every kind of, like, little in that they can get. And, like, not nickel and diming you is, like, a big part of that. If they want to be taken seriously, like, obviously, if they're a mobile game, no one really cares, and nickels and dimes all the way. But with like an indie game, maybe a company that wants to be seen as cool, who wants to get more funding for a bigger project, they might not have that kind of mentality because they have, you know, larger goals in mind, where like big studios are like, we like money.
Yeah. No, I think you make a great point. I mean, it's, I mean, I framed this whole conversation as this is the AAA version of something you see in the indie space. And I think that's the problem side of it being a AAA version is the budget of a AAA game is massive. And so they have to recoup that cost. And oftentimes that leads them down these monetization pathways that are less than ideal. And I think that's a great point.
I also think it's a combination of things. Like, indie games, because they're smaller and they have, I mean, indie games have to recoup costs as well, but they know they don't have the audience up front to say, we hope that X number of people give us $1. They don't have the audience to get recoup their costs with hoping that some people will eventually give them $1. Whereas with, so they have to like do those costs up front. So indie games, I don't think, I know a lot of indie games that are like free to play with like the longevity in mind, or at least I don't have personal experience with anything that is like that in the indie space. I always have a game that I play. There's a finite experience, and then there's maybe like a mode that has some kind of roguelike elements to it, or there's like a multiplayer thing where you can kind of go through based upon whatever cards you have, and how you play them will be interesting. But with something like Marvel, they're like, we have such a big thing. We want to, I would bet, obviously, I mean, their corporation, their goal is to make money. But I also think that they're like, if we just say it's free, anyone can play it. They know a huge number of people will give them that $1, and a huge number more people will give them much more than that.
Is this a free to play game?
I don't know.
I don't think that's been specifically announced. So I would doubt it. I would doubt it's a free to play, but it's possible.
I doubt it's free to play. It's probably you buy the base game and then you can like, and you can play it normally, right?
Yeah.
Like if you follow just like the storyline paths or whatever, basic kind of things. But if there's any kind of leader system, or if there's a multiplayer, are you playing against people at all ever, or is it only against NPCs?
I think all they've shown is a, you know, a campaign like against NPCs situation, but who knows what is yet to be revealed.
So both of you play card games. Jeff, I know you're big into the card situation. Michelle, you mentioned you play a lot of Hearthstone. What would be your ideal in this situation? Because the digital version being inspired by literally buying card packs and not knowing, and maybe you can go to your local, you know, game shop and, oh, you have this one card and I can buy it for $100, like whatever it is. What would be your ideal translation of the in-world physical card game experience into the digital card game experience?
That's a good question. I mean, I can tell you what I feel like I'm lacking, and I'm hoping that this game kind of fulfills that, is I kind of, when I watched the gameplay trailer, I was like, oh, I hope this is a game that I can just go and like get my little like nerdy collector crap on and be like, I'm going to just be into this game and just min-max for my own self, like the way that I feel when I do, you know, like a farming sim or something to that effect, like something that like I go on and I can just play against NPCs and there's not the pressure of competition necessarily or leaderboard or anything like that. If it's just like you know, playing through this story and like building these different packs and, you know, I don't know, like these different moves as you move on and not having to deal with the pressure of ladders or whatever. I kind of think that that sounds fun. Or I don't know. I like the fact that there's like things that you can probably unlock and, you know, reputation gain and stuff. It just feels like a little card battler sim in a way, like maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea, but that's kind of what it would be nice to have a low pressure situation that has like high reward with the amount of time I spend on it. Like that would be cool.
Yeah, I'm on the same page. I mean, I think there's a number of games you can point to that use card and card randomization as a way to spice up your gameplay experience, but not necessarily put pressure on you in a, you know, monetization situation. Right. It's fun in game, like, you know, Slay the Spire and all the myriad other games like it, where, you know, I'm getting cards, I'm progressing. It's time spent, not money spent, that lets me get better cards in the course of my playthrough, and I build up my deck and I get cool different abilities for my heroes. And then if Marvel's Midnight Suns wants to do DLC, wants to do paid extra content, release new Marvel Heroes and go, okay, now you've purchased, you know, Ghost Rider, and Ghost Rider looks like he's already in the game, but whatever, you know, Ms. Marvel or whoever's going to be added to the game, you purchased that character, kind of how they're doing the other Avengers game, the big action game. But then those cards are just sort of available in the game world and you get them through playing. I'm not a super fan. As much as I love card games and card-based systems in games, I'm not a fan of the, I'm looking for this card to add to my deck, so I need to buy a pack hoping it's in there. Oh, it wasn't. I guess I need to buy another pack. Oh, it's not there. You know, none of that. Right. Is,
and then like the disenchanting system where like you can get resources to actually like create that card or something isn't really that fair.
Right.
It doesn't really give you that much. So you kind of have to order lots of packs in order to really make up a couple legendary or bigger cards.
Right. Yeah. And there's ways to do it, right? There's ways to do it that it isn't a funnel into the purchasing system. It's more of a funnel into the incentivizing you playing system. You know, if you defeat so-and-so in the game, you're going to get an awesome card. Oh, cool. Okay. Now I want to play the game more. How I prefer it done.
I mean, Hearthstone had that for a while with the, it would like be part of the expansion. It would be like, I don't know if they've actually done one for a bit. I haven't been paying attention to that side of it, but there were like little PvE adventures that you could do that would tell you the story of like Rexxar or like Garrosh or whatever. And you'd go through it and you'd, as you played through the NPC storyline, which actually reimagined like Naxxramas really well, the bosses in Nax as card bosses. And it was really cool to see, actually. I really enjoyed it. And then you would earn different cards based on how far you got into the system or how difficult it was. You got better cards. I really liked that. And I was hoping that they would kind of do that more for people who wanted to continue to play down those paths to earn those kind of harder to get cards. But they never, I don't know how much they've built that out anymore.
Well, I think that's very possible how this game will work. I mean, we don't know yet exactly, but I think that it's certainly very possible that it's more an internal system and not an external monetization system, but we'll see. Either way, I'm really excited about Marvel's Midnight Suns. Lana, is this
a good contender?
Yeah. Oh man. Lana, I'm curious if this is a game that is interesting to you at all.
Definitely interesting to me. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, March 2022, we'll all reconvene and talk about how much we're playing it. I guess that's when it's coming out. So I think it's pretty cool. Like you said, Michelle, the amount of info that they're giving, kind of ramping up, is kind of fun. So
yeah, they showed a lot.
Yeah. Lana, what is your story of the week?
My story of the week is that former PlayStation boss, Sean Layden, says this generation's game budgets could routinely exceed $200 million. I saw that. I was like, 200 is not that much. So Sorry, $200 million, which is, you know, a lot of money.
So, I mean, it plays into exactly what we've been talking about in this, you know, the monetization and AAA and all that. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So Sean Layden, one of the former executives in charge of the PlayStation family of consoles, said in a recent interview with Bloomberg that, yeah, these games could be in danger of exceeding $200 million each. And this is an issue. He says, is that it encourages stagnation because companies are incentivized towards sequels to lower the risk of the titles that they have so that they can make that money back. And what happens is you end up with 3 to 4 silos of games or game types that persist in existing, and then the variety of games that are sort of in, you know, available to be played or try are sort of squeezed out of the main line of the
of the market.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting.
I mean, is that something that resonates with you? I think that we've certainly seen that. I mean, obviously, even this last generation, we've had reports of games in excess of $200 million budgets. I think Red Dead Redemption 2 was one of the big ones that people talked about. Obviously, it made its money back. But the idea here is that this is going to be sort of the norm, that these big AAA games in the PS5, Xbox Series era are going to just cost that much more. Layden said that, you know, it basically doubles each generation. And so we're up to like the $200 million mark. Mm-hmm. Do you think that, A, this is indicative of the kinds of things that he's talking about, where you get these small silos of games? And B, does that open up opportunity for, like we were talking about with the Midnight Suns, these smaller independent games to kind of fill that void and make things cheaper and offer lower cost games? What's your take on this news?
Yeah, my take on this news is, again, and like a couple parts. One, within the AAA space, it definitely resonates. You have these massive companies making massive games with massive teams. And you often have sort of at the helm of a lot of these companies, not passionate game developers, but like business boys who are like business brains who went to business school and know about the business. And the thing that they want to do is the reliable thing, the safe thing, to make the most money back, to sell to the most people. But also because AAA, they have the most money to advertise these games. So they make like top of lists most often, et cetera. And it's sort of like this vicious cycle that is being maintained by themselves, putting the most money behind things that are not risky. So that's one half of it is, yeah, I think in the AAA space, that resonates. But in my opinion, the AAA space, the indie space is huge. And with, of course, just like the power of the internet and the power of people and crowdsourcing in a lot of cases, a lot of really incredible products are being made and getting massive popularity from really tiny teams in indie spaces. And so, sure, I think that the folks making AAA PlayStation games in this generation could be spending an incredible amount of money. But I bet some of the most memorable games that will come out of this generation are not being made by AAA studios.
You know, I love that. I love the way you said that. That's awesome. Yeah. And honestly, to be fair, you know, the headline of this article is what Layden said, but the reason he said it was because he was announcing that he has started a new company whose goal is to get more kinds of people, more varied, diverse kinds of folks making games, that sort of allowing that huge barrier to not prevent folks from making games. It sounds like his Streamline Media Group will be kind of helping folks get into that indie space. And I think that's a laudable goal. I would love more people that can't afford $200 million price tags to make games.
Yeah. His quote there, which I really like, is his goal with Streamline Media Group is, "My goal in the last act of my career is really to bring more people into gaming creation and more people from all over the world and bring more people into the enjoyment of gaming." And something I feel like I saw, especially through this last year and a half with COVID, is a lot more people who have not experienced gaming before getting into it, realizing there's a corner of the gaming world that is for them.
Yeah.
And so a world that he's sort of presenting was Streamline Media, where you have many different voices, many different options, many different people elevated in the gaming development space, I think also presents well to a community of people, many of whom are just realizing that they are, can identify as a gamer.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. I mean, it was interesting. We, you know, Layden stepped down as the head of PlayStation pretty abruptly and then has been quiet for a while. And it's interesting to see this is the project that he is associating himself with now. I think that's really cool. I hope it is. I hope it achieves the stated goal. I think that's really great. Michelle, a couple of weeks ago on this show or last week or whatever it was, we talked about Activision sort of becoming the Call of Duty company in a lot of ways and narrowing, you know, just kind of putting all their chips on one big franchise because that franchise is so profitable. Do you resonate with this messaging as well, that yeah, you know, these big companies, big AAA companies are kind of making fewer games and spending more money on fewer titles?
Definitely. I mean, it makes me wonder what those internal conversations were like for him on like what really got to the point where because he did abruptly leave. And so what exactly about it happened, right? Like, I've been noticing a lot on social media, especially like there is definitely a group that is invested in game developers investing more and more into their games, right? Like all the content creators, which, you know, Twitch people, whatnot, they, YouTubers, like everybody who's kind of like in the marketing and promotion side of gaming, all of those streamers would like to make ad money, would like to be paid by developers to use their audiences. And, you know, the AAA titles are who has the budgets for that.
Yeah.
And the streamers, you know, which I don't blame them if, you know, a lot of them, this is like all they do. So if that's all your income and, you know, you really are counting, if you're a smaller streamer, you're really counting on like maybe one brand deal a month, like maybe, you know, and even then they're hard to get. Like, I don't know. I see this as it's just sort of like siloing to like the top streamers who have the biggest audiences that, you know, like Call of Duty and like Assassin's Creed and, you know, like these big, you know, annual releases, that it can be a part of an advertising machine, that's who, you know, you go to do that. And if for some reason that streamer in 2 years is not streaming anymore, or they realize the audience is too toxic, or whatever reason that a developer decides to like pull away from that, there's from that person, or the person pulls away from the developer, there are, you break down a wall and there's like 1,000 people waiting to take that role. So I think that, you know, a lot of this is being hyped by like this kind of a feel, like the more streamers, I don't know. I feel like it's just sort of like, it's just a cycle that's going around and around and around. Like, it's just however they can make the most money. And you'll just start to see like there's heads of certain areas that are friends with the like streamers, and people will get, you know, more and more narrow on how many people they're really using to promote these things. Like, it's just, you know, it's like when you see an advertisement in the Super Bowl, they're going to pay more for that kind of a person's audience, like for Ninja or Dr. Disrespect or Tim the Tatman or Dr. Lupo or all of them, like very, very few women.
Yeah.
But like those, it's going to be, you know, the AAA companies know that they can advertise directly to gamers and, you know, feature gameplay. And it's just a machine at this point. And I think that, you know, indie definitely can get a part of that, but they're not going to get those giant big audiences. So yeah, it's just going to keep, he does say exponentially, which at first I thought was a little dramatic of him to say, but I do think that they want it to be exponential. You know, they want these budgets to cost more and more, because that means that, you know, they've got more and more money to like spend on the advertising. And they're hoping that it, you know, equates to, you know, more people knowing about the game. Like, it just like, it's just like grows and grows and grows and grows. And so I like seeing the fact that he's stepping away and being like, like maybe there's some, you know, maybe we can care about women and people of color. That'd be cool.
Yeah. No, I think you bring up so many good points there. I think it is, it is interesting. It becomes, you know, it's this risk aversion that these big companies have. Yeah. And you guys all both have been talking about it. And they want that sure bet, right? They'll spend the, yes, $200 million if they know for sure it'll make $300 million, you know? Right. And having lots of riskier bets is not optimized, right, for their profit margin. And it's really a shame. And I think we see it a lot in the movie industry as well. You know, we over the last decade or plus, you know, 15 to 20 years, there's been this narrowing of the theatrical experience into, like, you know, Marvel movie or, you know, big budget, yeah, superhero movies.
Definitely.
And then like Oscar bait, you know, there's nothing else, right? There's, yeah, either tiny stuff or massive stuff. And, right, and it's not
like
great.
Rom-coms have like taken a slide. Like, I don't feel, yeah, like I don't see rom-coms anymore. And the problem is, like, especially with like streamers and, you know, YouTubers and whatever, just like the general gaming marketing side of the industry, like the bigger the company is, the more money the company has, the cooler it is for you to be involved. So even if they don't pay you as a streamer to stream their game, they're banking on the fact that like mid-level streamers want to be a part of that train of playing the cool game that's coming, mm-hmm, out right now that all the bigger streamers are playing too. So there's this thing that happens where it's like everyone's playing the same game because,
yeah,
it's a cool game to play and everybody wants that company to like turn and look at you and shine the pretty light on you and for you to be like, oh my God, they noticed me. I'm going to get paid $1,000, you know, like, and that's all it's, yeah.
Yeah. I think you highlight a really interesting phenomenon. I mean, I look at myself on this show and I definitely, I mean, I'm not chasing any kind of money from a publisher, but I do definitely feel pressure sometimes to be involved in the,
oh yeah,
the conversation, right? The yes, zeitgeist, you know, the hot game of the moment. I'm like, if there's a big game that comes out, we should probably be talking about it on the show. And I think that is a double-edged sword, right? Because, yes, it's fun to be talking about the game everybody's talking about and to have an opinion about it, but, yeah, it's also great to highlight these other things. And I, you know, I really try to do that, but I think we can do better. And I think it's laudable to have somebody of this guy's pedigree worried about that as well. And I hope more of us, you know, think about it.
So much of the conversations in the gaming industry come from the fact that it's driven by like marketing. So like whatever,
yeah,
the game is being out and the amount of marketing that goes behind it. And a lot of these publishers too, they have, you know, deals with all the different, you know, websites that report on games. So, you know, like you'll get, I used to be a writer for different websites and they'll send you full on press releases with like game codes and everything. So like, it's right there. You're like, oh, well, I need to write an article this week. This is awesome. And this is a good game. Totally. But like people who have like those companies, these AAA titles that have the money to do all of that and put together a nice fancy package that you want to like unbox on social media on top of everything, yeah, you're continuing to like, it's for them, it's a good bet. And there's like an entire industry of people right now waiting to be like in commercials or like, you know, our watered down idea of a commercial now, which is basically just like a spokesperson.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting. I mean, I see what they're doing. I just hope that there's more guys like this guy who, you know, this Layden guy that is stepping out and going like, hold on, let's make something big. Let's make something cool. And they'll attract the right people to it. I mean, yeah. I think that other side of the industry, it's like what he says, it's going to exponentially go up. And like the more you exponentially go up, some point you're going to be on a cliff and you're not going to like, it doesn't like grade down very easy, you know, like that, those kinds, mm-hmm, of things crash. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. Mostly, yeah, I'm just rambling.
Yeah. And I think you're right that it, you know, who knows, right? It's just speculation, but it does seem to have grown out of very specific experience that he had running a very big video game company. You know,
yeah, I would love to read his book.
Right, yeah, right, yeah, right. Well, speaking of commercials, I have to do one now. yes! But I am pleased to talk about Squarespace because I use it and I have recommended it to to friends and family. They are sponsoring the show and have done since we started 8 years ago. So I'm pleased to say Squarespace is the place for you to make a website. You do not have to hire someone to build a website for you. You don't even have to learn HTML. You can do it the easy way, and you can still do it yourself. Make it yourself. Make a beautiful, highly effective website yourself with Squarespace. All you have to do is start with one of their professionally designed templates, gorgeous templates that you can start with, and then you just start moving stuff around, drag and drop, and making it your own. It looks beautiful, and it's so simple. It's all what you see is what you get. Drag and drop. Even if you want to sell things on your website, they have powerful e-commerce functionality. You just drag it over to your website. It plugs right in and it works. It's so simple. You never, ever have to upgrade or patch anything. That's all done in the background for you automatically. You don't have to worry about if it's going to work on mobile or which mobile devices it's going to work on. It all happens automatically for you. It's so simple. They have built-in search engine optimization. They have analytics if you want to grow your business over time, or even if you just want to blog or publish content or promote a business or announce an event. Any reason that you need a website, Squarespace makes it simple. And if you run into any problems, they have 24/7 award-winning customer support. It's great. Like I said, I've been using it. JeffCanada.com was built on Squarespace. I love it. You can make it yourself. And if you want to try it, we're going to give you a discount. You can go and check out squarespace.com/Jeff sent me, and you can get a free trial. You don't even have to put your credit card in. And then when you are ready to check out, ready to launch your site, use the offer code Jeff sent me, JeffSentme, all one word. You'll get 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Even if you're just looking to buy a domain, Squarespace is a great place to buy domains. They have over 200 extensions. It's really slick. If you put in a domain that's not available, they give you all kinds of suggestions. It's great. Squarespace.com/Jeff sent me, and the promo code Jeff sent me will get you 10% off your first order. All right. My story of the week is all this craziness with Horizon Forbidden West pre-orders. We don't have to talk about it a ton, but I do think it's interesting. I am so excited about Horizon Forbidden West. It is, I think, my number one most anticipated game right now. Maybe that and Doke V. I'm like so excited about Doke V. February 22nd is the release date, so I got to wait until next year. But I didn't have to wait to find out about the numerous editions that can be pre-ordered now. I think this is very much in line with what we've been talking about all episode long about monetization and how things are monetized. I wanted to get both of your reactions to all of this. It's fascinating because here we are in this weird between times, that has been elongated by COVID, where, these games are cross-gen. Horizon Forbidden West will be released on PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5. And there are all these editions. There's the special edition, which evidently isn't that special because there's three editions that are more expensive than it. There's the special edition, the digital collector's edition, and the regalia edition. Each of them has a different number of incredibly interesting extra bits and bobs that you might want. Full sculpted versions of Aloy and the giant beast that we saw in the trailer. Different beasts. There's the one with regalia on it, or it's the big looking looks like a mastodon or a elephant. It looks really cool. I mean, if you're into physical stuff, you can get some cool physical stuff. Obviously digital stuff, costumes, extra bobs and bits. But the really interesting part of the story, I mean, I kind of want to get both of your reactions to like the number of editions to sort through in any kind of big AAA game. But in addition to that, I think the more interesting thing is this weirdness that happened where the PS5 version of Horizon Forbidden West is at that new $69.99 price point, the $70 price point, when we've been living in the $59.99, $60 price point for an entire multiple Eternity. Generations. Yeah. Well, so if you buy the PlayStation 4 version, you can play it on PlayStation 5 via backwards compatibility. But if you want the PlayStation 5 version, it costs you more. So if you're planning to get a PlayStation 5, there was a period where buying the cheaper version actually gave you more options. But, and that's how they announced this. But then they had a day of people responding and going, this makes no sense whatsoever. And so the new PlayStation boss, Jim Ryan, who succeeded Mr. Layden, announced that that's not how it's going to be, that Horizon Forbidden West was originally going to be one of their launch games, and all their launch games are going to have free upgrade path from PlayStation 4 to PlayStation 5. So they will no longer do that, have this weird thing where you're not getting the PlayStation 4 version if you buy the PlayStation 5 version. It's all going to work, which is nice. I'm glad they did that. And further, the announcement was that they will always, if they have a cross-gen game, always allow you to pay $10 to go from the PlayStation 4 version to the PlayStation 5 version. So that's a lot of stuff. Michelle, I'm curious your reaction to like all of these additions. I mean, it's nothing new, of course, but it's a lot of stuff.
It's a lot of stuff. Like, I mean, here's the thing, and I don't mean this in any rude way toward Horizon, because I think it's really cool. It's a cool game. I mean, how many people are this big of a fan that they would want this many different tiers of content? Like, I mean, I could understand like one super big thing and then like maybe just the base one, or maybe a collector's edition. Sure. But I don't know. It just feels like
that used to be how it was, right? It was, there was the, like the special edition meant it was special and that was different than the regular edition. Yeah. And now special edition is low on the tier list, you know,
what pisses me off. It's not like this is like a la carte and it's not like they're adding it and packaging this together. Like each one of these things has its own stupid giant packaging. And like, I guess that annoys me a lot. Like I feel like it's over the, I don't know how many people are like, this is my favorite game in the world. I need all of these things and all of these different editions, or you know, I don't know. I feel like people either are going to get the special or they're going to get the Regalia one.
I should say the Regalia is $260. I mean, it's no, that's a chunk of change. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, but if you're already paying $200 and you're that big of a fan, you're paying $260.
I guess.
My question is, I assume that these other things that are part of it will not be purchasable later from a store. Is that the idea?
That's usually the case. Although, so, you know, eBay is a store, I guess.
Yeah. So I mean, like some eShop, because I feel like the way that seems reasonable to do it would be like, if you buy the Regalia edition, it gets you the special, what is that thing? The Tremortisk. It'll get you the special Regalia.
Well pronounced.
Oh, it was. Yeah.
I think it's Tremortusk. Really, yes.
Is it? Tremortusk. I'm sorry. That is definitely that. I'm an idiot. Tremortusk.
I liked your version.
Tremortusk. The Regalia Tremortusk. It gets a little more advanced in the later packages. I know I'm going to play this game. I'm sorry. I'm probably like peaking my mic. I'm very loud.
It's fine. It's okay.
Tremortusk.
I haven't watched any of the trailers or anything because I know I'm going to play it. So I want like literally 0% spoilers for it. So if they've pronounced Tremortusk, it's obviously that. Okay. I feel like an idiot. Anyway. So the important part is like, better. Okay, you get like the upgraded, you upgrade the Tremortusk into the Tremortusk. And then like if you want, I feel like they could just be like, and then get the 10% discount in the shop or like whatever. So you can a la carte add these things. I feel like the mentality is there are people who love this and have loved this franchise more than anything else in existence and will buy it because it exists and it will be exclusive. But I think it's interesting that they do it this way. Maybe it convinces people to spend more money than they normally would. But I feel like my inclination would be like, okay, you get these special things, but you can also get a percent discount on all these other things that are available. But the other packages could also add them to them, which I feel like would make more, but I feel like maybe this would make more people spend that extra. Like if you're going to spend 200, you're going to spend 260. It's going to make that many more people to make it worth it. Spend that extra 60.
Yeah. I have two things. First is this is sort of the whales of, you know, physical AAA game purchasing, right? The whales that we talk about with regard to mobile, where people are, you know, a small group of people are spending a disproportionate amount of the income of the game, you know, are responsible for that portion. I think that's the case here, where a very small number of people buy these, but it's proportionally, but it makes lots of money for them. So it makes sense for them. The second thing I wanted to say is I kind of wish Christian was here, because when I was at his house, I saw the Aloy statue from the first game's crazy edition. So I'm wondering which of these he's going to buy.
Well, I feel like it's interesting because they're like, here's this upgraded package. And I'm like, cool. I could see wanting the Regalia Tremor Tusk to be the special big statue. But I'm like, who's getting that map? And like, what are you framing it? What are you doing with the map?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I feel like this on so many things from Blizzard games, like where I'm just like, why do I have this? Like, what is this like? Postcard question mark?
Like, I've never understood the one. I've never understood is the steel box, the steel case. Like, what do I care if it's a steel case? Like, what is that? Why is that?
You know
why?
You know what you do with those? With all of these, like all that kind of stuff, like the random keychain that you get in there. Like, there's like a keychain, or you know, like all like that steel case, whatever. You send them to your nieces and nephews. They think you're so cool. Yeah, when you do that. I have so many t-shirts I've sent off. I'm like, here, guys. And they're like, oh, she's so cool. She likes video games. I'm like, this is really just stuff I don't want, but okay.
I used to keep it all in a drawer. So then when we'd have like tours coming through the studio area, I would be like, yeah, I'll show you how animation works. Oh, by the way, thanks for stopping by. And I'd like open this drawer and
throw them out like a pinata.
And they'd be like, this is amazing. And I'm like, I give you a lasting memory and got rid of trash.
That's right.
It's like going to the dentist office when you're a kid. It's like they give you a little toy that's a piece of garbage that you throw away 2 minutes later.
Yeah, but it'll be so valuable to somebody who's not me. Like, I feel bad. It's not trash. I just... like for me, because I like have so many keychains and things, and it's like really privileged. Anyways, I feel like I'd be like, here's my big statue. Great. Okay. Who wants a postcard, baby?
Right.
In the desk drawer.
Right. The statues are cool. I will admit the statues are pretty cool.
Statues are great.
Yeah. But Michelle, I'm like a foot and a half away from multiple collector's edition boxes of WoW expansions. And you know all the extra stuff that comes in them? Yeah, they're still in those boxes on my shelf. Like,
I liquidated all that on eBay. You should definitely do that.
I have so many, and I've never played WoW.
Well, you just got them, right? You just got them?
They're signed copies. What do I do?
Yeah.
I mean, they look something. Nice in like,
I mean,
our office.
Less
like,
now.
Guess, but... you know? Yeah, a lot less now. But
anyway.
Like, you know, there's a lot of stuff in there that like I actually just got rid of. I had two Diablo 3 Reaper of Souls signed boxes, and like one of them was like only, I don't know, like five or six people signed it. And my husband like walked in the line and decided to give up six people in. So I had this box and I'm like, it's not really signed like the other ones, and it just kind of looks like sad. So I sold that one on eBay.
That's amazing.
And on the inside of it had the Reaper of Souls CD like soundtrack in there, as if like you can't listen to it on digital music. So, like, who's like throwing that in their car? So anyway, I posted on eBay and this guy writes me, he's like, is the audio CD in there? I'm like, well, you're the customer. Like, that's exactly the like, I'm glad it's found its way to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's certainly in
you
there.
Care
it's
you
the
care
only
about
thing
that
in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure there's lots of people listening that are super into collector's editions and stuff like that, and I'm not trying to diss anybody, you know, yuck anybody's no. yum. Yeah. You know, if you're into that stuff, that's great, that's awesome.
I love collector's editions. I have tons of them. There's just like, it's just, here's the thing. I don't think every single item in these collector's editions are like collectible. Like they're not worth it. Some of them are totally cool. Like there's a screen wipe thing that I have that's like the map of Azeroth. And I'm like, that's cool. I use that all the time. Like there's little things like that, which I think are great. But when it's just like, you know, here's some exclusive postcards, and you're like, oh sure, like it's just, that's when I go, but
How much did it up the price? Yeah, exactly.
And I think that this one strikes me as being particularly excessive simply because you have the crazy, you know, multiple $100 statue, and then you have the like statue plus one, right? You have the statue with just a different outfit on it. It just seems like, well, why two different statues?
Yeah.
It's a bit much, but doesn't take away from it. Game merch, man. You gotta love it. Well, I'm excited about that game nonetheless. All right. Let's talk about the games that we have been playing in a segment we call the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. All right, Michelle, I know that you have been playing lots of WoW. In fact, I think we're taking you away from a raid right now.
You know, I had everyone do it last night, so I'm totally free.
You're awesome. You're the best. I'm more interested in the state of WoW right now. I mean, post all this craziness with Blizzard, and maybe, I don't know, I don't want to put you on the spot, but what your take on that is and how comfortable you feel still playing the game and all that stuff.
Well, okay, so... I mean, all that news is really hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, all I've said publicly is just, you know, I've dealt with my own issues with sexism there at times. And, you know, so I feel really bad for the women who are in that environment all the time, every day, dealing with it. That sucks. What I know is that there's a lot of really good people there on the inside, women and people of color who are there, who have fought from the inside for diversity and equality. And I did the, you know, I supported the walkout, so we didn't raid that night. And, you know, my whole raid team was totally cool with that. You know, so we did that. But at the same time, you know, I look at WoW before I was ever even in gaming, like when I was just like a fan only, and I loved playing, like that was my escape, was that. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the people that are my gaming friends are on World of Warcraft. And some of them have become my real life friends, people that were at my wedding, you know, like these are good friends. So to take that away from players who really have that as, you know, something they do a couple times a week, is, you know, I wouldn't expect anybody to stop playing. We did have people in our guild who stepped away, for, you know, what they, you know, that's just what they needed to do, which is completely fine. However anybody wants to, you know, deal with it is cool. But I think if people still want to play and they have their group and, you know, they're aware of what's going on over there and they're still supporting the, you know, the women and people of color and the other men who work there, who are legitimate, good human beings.
Yeah.
I think there's nothing wrong with that. You know, and just kind of being aware to sort of like separate those things and, you know,
yeah.
And I think it's good too, as a good shakeup, and it got people playing other games, which people should do. Like I've taken lots of years off of WoW and played other games. Like I think it's important to do and healthy to do. So in the end, I think it'll be a good thing. I mean, I will say that, you know, right now, Warcraft is in, you know, end game, you know, patch for this expansion. Mm-hmm. You know, this raid is about fighting Sylvanas Windrunner. And, you know, unfortunately they've really hurt her story, in my opinion. And that's been really hard for me, to, you know, to know kind of some of the things that have gone down inside story-wise of how we got to this point. Are upsetting, just very frustrating. And I think that the team that's there is doing everything they can to kind of right the ship. But, you know, unfortunately, like one of the best characters in their entire, you know, lore is kind of got just deduced. She could have been really powerful, but they kind of made her evil when she burned the world tree and, you know, and now it's like this split soul thing to like say, oh, well, it wasn't really her. It was like an evil her, right? Like, it's just kind of, I don't know. It's a little bit, I think that they could have told a better story. So that bums me out a bit, but I will say the gameplay itself is excellent. And everybody that's playing, at least on our team, are really doing a good job. Like we got ahead of the curve. We beat Sylvanas on heroic, with like 20 some people
a couple nights ago, and we did it last week too for the first time, and we got awesome. our realm first. We were like,
wow, that's amazing.
We were the race to realm first. There were like three guilds that were all neck and neck. And so that was really exciting. You know, raid leading can be really hard. You know, people really need to have like good raid etiquette. So, I mean, there's definitely times where I've gotten frustrated, but you know, it's fun to raid lead. We've got such a great team to do it with.
I had no idea that you were playing at that level. I mean, I know you were into it hardcore, but I had no idea that you were like realm first level of awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I love raiding. I think it's a lot of fun. I think there's something really cool about the teamwork it takes of people all over the world, really, to play, to all log in at the same time and all make all the right moves where you're all, you know, in bedrooms and offices all across the world, and you're able to communicate and get something done. To me, that's just such a high level of teamwork and
totally,
you know, cooperation. So I really love, the people that I play with. It's a lot of fun, and it's something that my husband and I do together. So we are now kind of winding down a little bit because we don't have the numbers yet for Hall of Fame. So in rating for World of Warcraft, in order for Mythic rating to open up, which is what everyone sees for the race to world first, in order for you to raid Mythic, you have to have 20 players all on your server to play together. But the problem is, like, we have a really low pop server, and there's a lot of low pop servers, and especially with a lot of people taking exodus from the game, there's a lot of people that are kind of like not playing. So in order for us to do Mythic, we would have to get people to move to a low pop server, which most people aren't going to do, or we can pug them and they can play cross realm. But Blizzard has a cross realm gate kept for Mythic until 100 Horde guilds and 100 Alliance guilds both beat Sylvanas on Mythic. When that happens, they open cross-realm rating, and I could have you guys play, even if you're not on my server and you have like a good enough character, you could come join the team and we could do Mythic. But right now, as it is with the Exodus and just like the way that most teams are Horde right now at high level, just due to like racial stats and stuff, like for, you know, the different races that you can play in the game, there's only like 50 Alliance guilds that have done it. So the problem is there are not enough Alliance guilds to like finish out doing the Hall of Fame to make it so that Mythic can open up for all of these other guilds that are sitting there waiting, being like, all right, well, we've beat it, but we can't do anything. There's nothing for me to do. So they're going to lose people, in my opinion, because I understand at the time while they had this Hall of Fame rule to like really encourage, you know, top level competition and get people like really out there and kind of reward the people who are like the cutting edge sort of bleeding edge players. But now it just, it's going to hurt them, to be honest. I mean, I've talked about it a few times on Twitter, much to my demise, of, you know, elitist guys being like, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, why do you though? I don't know. We'll see. The game is in an odd place. I'll say that. It's just in a strange place.
I think, I mean, over and above even all of the, you know, cultural stuff with regard to the company and the fallout of that, I think even before all that, you know, chalk it up to COVID or whatever you want, but even before that was sort of the pace of content release had really taken a hit.
Yeah.
And I know 9.1 didn't come out for, you know, much later than previous, you know, 0.1 update, big content updates. So did you feel frustration there? I mean, do you feel like there's not enough content? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they did just release like Chorthia, which we call Chorthia because it's just like, your dailies, you know? But it's, and they've got some pretty complicated, systems in place right now, like gear systems, and it's not explained very well. There's just things that for the first time, I think I really feel the fact that there are parts of the game missing, or just like something that would have been handled in expansions past. It just feels like the mission table, for example, isn't like really explained very well, or there's kind of like a tea party reputation gain thing. Like we were talking earlier with like Fire Emblem and the Marvel game, it has kind of a little reputation thing in there like that, but it's not explained. There's a lot missing. You know, the domination sockets that they currently have right now for endgame raid gear is very confusing. I mean, it's a whole thing. So there are parts of the game I feel like normally someone would explain what's going on, and now they're just kind of like, here's the system. You guys will figure it out on Google.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like Shadowlands, where do you rank it as far as an expansion? It's sort of the lower half or upper half of...
Upper expansion. Half for as yeah? far as like, right. yeah, yeah. For as far as like expansions go and excitement and gameplay and storytelling, it's up there with Lich King, and which Great. Most people don't, I think people think I'm exaggerating when I say that. I'm really not. Like the story is there with like some big sort of potholes that they kind of had to cover up badly.
Right.
Like that.
Well, I love talking to someone who is super deep into a game, you know, and give us that really, you know, expert eye view of the day to day of an intense community. And I really appreciate it. I love having that kind of a conversation. The depth of the conversation is really appreciated.
You know, what's so, really thanks. Fun though? I will tell you this. What's really fun to watch right now are the Mythic Dungeon Invitational. Like that was going on today. Mythic Dungeons are a time-based dungeon experience now. And there's like a full on esport for it. It's That's so cool. much fun to watch people play at that level. And just, I don't know, we do Mythic Dungeons, and actually the new guy that just got put in place at Activision, the one, like the co-lead now, the guy and the girl who are taking over for Jalen Brack, he has been running, he does Mythic Keys at a level 20, which like I've never even done a level 20 Mythic Key. And this guy has done Mythic level on all of the dungeons. So it tells me that he is an actual player.
Yeah.
Like he knows what he's talking about with those. So it makes me feel a little better knowing that there's, you know, a guy who's like gaming in that level in that position. But also just like Mythic Dungeons are so fun to watch. So if any of you like, I don't know, have time and want to like check out a new esport, it's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. I also love, you know, we've obviously covered a lot of the negativity around it, and justifiably so. And I mean, I know you're sensitive to it as well, but it's also nice to hear a reminder that like the games are still fun. You know, the games are fun. And I think, you know, it's nice to hear that. So
you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, right. you know, in all of it. Like, you know, sometimes you can. It's like, just throw it all out. But I think for something that has spanned generations at this point, you know, it's just in a different place. I don't know. I'm
generation. I'm happy. She says, making me feel old.
Hey, you and I are on the same, I think. So we're good.
Awesome.
We're good. But yeah. Yeah. That's my game.
Cool.
What about you? What are you playing?
Lana? Yeah. What's on your playlist?
On my playlist? I'm playing Pokemon Unite still, and I'm playing, Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword a little. That's a little bit on hiatus.
Yeah.
Pokemon Unite, I think I talked about a little bit last time I was in the show, which was not too long ago. And at that time I'd played a couple games and been like, oh, I get it. And I'm here to say that now I hate it.
Was it taking over your life? Is that what you hate?
I can't stop playing it. I cannot stop playing it. I hate it. For so many reasons. I don't hate it because I'm like, oh, I love it so much. I hate it. Like, I hate it fundamentally. It is so flawed. It hurts me to my core. But every single time I'm still like, God, but it's like only 10 minutes.
Quit you, Pokemon Unite.
No, it is so, there's so much going for it that is positive and fun and good. Pokemon are cute and cool and nostalgic. MOBAs, obviously I love them with my history in Heroes and League, like love it. It's like a fun, cute, like the 10 minute limit of games, like no matter what, I know it's gonna be 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That's great to fit between anything. I have 10 minutes between a couple meetings because one ended early. Like, what do you think, you're gonna animate something in 10 minutes? No, we'll play Pokemon Unite for 10 minutes.
Are you playing it on your Switch?
Yeah.
I'm really glad to hear this, by the way, because I saw this promoted recently and I didn't know about it until maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I'm like, Pokemon as a MOBA? And yeah. I got really excited about it. And since you played Heroes in League and you like it, that is
I believe I said I hate it, Michelle. Well, let me get into the part you said. No.
It was very clear.
So this is it's great because like it's good because I have a bunch of friends who like MOBAs. I have somebody who started dating somebody and they're not super into MOBAs, but they could get into Pokemon Unite because of all the other touch points, because it's Pokemon, because it's short games, and because there's like a smaller pool of potential Pokemon you can play. So there's less to sort of learn on the uptake. Where something like League, like I don't even know how many champions they have, 150 plus.
60, yeah.
Heroes, 80 something plus. Like, so
what does this have, 24, 22?
Yeah, like not much at all. But it is so deeply flawed. There's a mechanic of Zapdos. Well, there's two things that sort of combine to be super flawed.
It's pronounced Tremor Tusk.
You know what? It's been fun. Sorry. I'll never come back. Tremortus. Okay, this is what I need from you, Jeff. You already have some editing to do, so just go back.
Tremortus.
Oh, no, that's staying in.
Only calling it Tremortus from here on out. Yeah.
Tremortus.
It's such a better way to say it. Anyway, sorry. Way go ahead. Cooler. You said a silly word, and I had to make a joke. I'm sorry.
You know what? I respect it because I would 100% do the same thing to you. So there's two mechanics. So in the last 2 minutes of any match, it's like the final segment or whatever the name of it is. And all, so the difference between this and other MOBAs, there's many, but one of them is rather than having sort of forts or keeps in a lane that you're trying to destroy that can shoot you and do damage to you, there's sort of baskets like basketball, and you're collecting these globes and you have to go and channel on one of the baskets to score. And based on how many of the globes you currently have on your Poke possession, it'll take longer for you to score a basket. And if you score up to 100 on any of these baskets, it destroys it in lane. And now they have fewer like places to get health or get like little speed boosts or even like sort of port to and to get into the battle faster. So there's reasons for wanting to do that. But the way that you win a match is scoring the most points in these baskets. So in the last 2 minutes of any match, any point you score is doubled.
Oh, so people like hoard them and keep them till the end?
And so that's one thing that some people do because it's like the ones
bad
that are
people,
the ones that are further out in lane. It's still good to try and destroy some of them earlier because it'll take away health opportunities for the enemy team to heal up during team fights and things like that. But the mechanic of Zapdos, which also spawns with 2 minutes left in the game, like a boss, like for Heroes of the Storm, Jeff, I know that's your touch point.
Yeah, it used to be my true love. I haven't played in a long time. I broke my habit, but it was bad for a while. Yes.
Yeah, this is the longest streak I've personally ever gone without playing. It's been like 2.5 months.
Yeah, I mean, right? I was like so addicted in the way that it sounds like you are with this game. Yeah.
I'm mad about it still. and so Zapdos spawns like a golem or something in a hero's map. And if you go in and if your team kills Zapdos, it means you don't have to channel to score points. You instantly score.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And so
kill Zapdos and then make 100 baskets real quick.
I mean, you can make 5 baskets really quick. And if each person has 50 points, it doubles. That's 500 points and you win. Whoa. So even if you have like no points up to that point.
You know what this is? This sounds like, sorry to interrupt you. This,
go ahead.
This sounds like what's wrong with friggin', what's the game in Harry Potter?
Oh, it is that. The snitch. It's Quidditch.
Yeah, it's like, it's Quidditch. It's like.
Yeah.
Every time I read those books, I was like, this game is fundamentally broken. Man, there's no point in doing any part of the game. There's like, oh, there's beaters and slammers and there's people trying to score. It's like,
what's the
no
point?
One cares. It's 150 points for the snitch. Who cares?
Each basket of the quaffle is half a point. Worthless.
Yeah, wasting your time. What is just get the snitch and win the game. It makes no sense. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So it's really broken points wise. Like this, the thing, so the Zappos shouldn't give that much.
So, well, it's the combination of no matter what, like as either team scoring within the last 2 minutes doubles the amount of points. But if you get Zapdos, you score instantly. So basically, if you get Zapdos, I'm going to say 90%. I would love to see the statistics. 90% of the time, that team will win. Because they can just go, and it doesn't matter if anybody's trying to stop them or interrupt them. They can't because it's instant.
Yeah, the whole rest of the game is pointless, right? You just wait until Zapdos, and then that's it, right?
Pretty much. But like people don't – a lot of people are new to this game, at least new to MOBAs, you can tell, probably for multiple reasons. I assume many of them are actual children, younger ages, who are more into Pokemon. And I assume a lot of people are into Pokemon and have not played a lot of MOBAs. So there's a lot of what I think of as fundamental MOBA knowledge that people don't have that also infuriates me. Like, if the enemy team shows up to try and kill you, stop killing a wild Pokemon that's just like a little creep in the lane and turn on the team. Like, there's so many like tiny things that make me just so angry. And then I'm like, oh, it's been 6 hours. I should probably stop. So
knowing Nintendo, they'll never fix this. They're like, no, this is perfectly fine.
The patch notes are so funny because they will – the one of the patch notes was talking about the things that they've changed, and it just said for like Machamp or somebody, move speed changed. But it doesn't tell you if it's faster or slower.
Different though. Different.
It's different.
Yeah.
You will find out.
So, I'm playing a lot of Pokemon.
What do you think?
I'm playing a lot of it. Too much of it. I hate it. I can't stop playing it.
That's hilarious. I love it. It reminds me when I was playing Heroes of the Storm a lot, it was that same thing of like, okay, I can get in a game in 25 minutes. So if I have a half an hour, I can play Heroes of the Storm. And so I would go, okay, there's no universe in which I'm going to sit down and play a game that I'm going to play for 2 hours. Like, I'm not going to play, you know, Horizon Forbidden West or whatever the game du jour is that you sit down and you play for 2 hours. I don't have time for that. But I do have a half an hour. I can sit down and play Heroes of the Storm. And then 2 hours later, I've played four games of Heroes of the Storm.
Yeah.
I was going to, I was about to be like real complimentary to you that you were able to do that.
No, no, like, that's the problem. Is that
sit down and play one game. Like,
no, your brain says, oh yeah, no, cool. This is the short version. And then you lose that first match and you're like, I'm playing another one.
You can't end in a loss.
Yeah. No way. I got to win.
After the third loss, you're like, I am going to murder everyone that I'm playing with.
I would so love to get you back into Heroes, Jeff. It would be so fun.
It would take very little to get me back into Heroes, honestly.
Yo, I'm gonna tweet you my battle tag and we'll see what happens.
It owned my life for a long time. I mean, I was like, I had a coach.
I was
serious about it. Yeah.
I heard you say
coach?
That.
Coach?
Yeah. No, God, no. I had a coach.
Well,
to
Cloud9 Kanata over here.
No universe. I mean, I wish in my wildest dreams. No, I had a coach to get me to halfway competent. You know, I was like,
what was your rank?
Trying to get out of gold. You know, I'm nothing to write home about.
I'll show you how to make it to diamond, boy.
Yeah, I wish. I dreamed of diamond. Anyway, that is awesome. That's Pokemon Unite.
I'm gonna play it.
It gets Atlanta's 100% seal of approval, is my understanding.
You know, she loves it. I can't stop, so that's the important part, I guess.
I've been on my playlist. Well, actually, first let me thank our second sponsor, which is Ritual. Ritual is a vitamin. And here's the thing. Gaps in your diet should not be ignored. Only over 97% of women aged 19 to 50 are not getting enough vitamin D from their diet. And 95% are not getting their recommended daily intake of key omega-3s. That's why Ritual's Essential for Women multivitamin was formulated by exhaustive research to help fill nutrition gaps in the diets of women ages 18 and over. Ritual started as this wonderful multivitamin you could take any time of day. You didn't have to take it with food. That's why my wife has been taking it for years now. She loves Ritual. We've been subscribers to Ritual for literally years. And the reason you don't have to take it with food is because it was designed to not upset sensitive stomachs. My wife has had an issue with that with multivitamins before. And it's so inconvenient to have to, you know, remember to do your multivitamin right when you eat. It's so much better to just be able to take it whenever you want. And also to know what is in your multivitamin. Ritual was designed by someone who thought, hey, I'm reading the ingredients in my food. Why shouldn't I be able to see the ingredients in my vitamins? And that is why Ritual has a transparent policy to show you exactly what's in it. It's incredible. And my wife's been using it for a long time. Right now, Ritual is offering listeners of DLC 10% off their first 3 months. If you visit ritual.com/DLC, you can turn healthy habits into a ritual. That's 10% off at ritual.com/DLC, RITUAL.com/DLC. It's great to have the subscription too, because then you don't have to worry about it. It just shows up at your house. It's pretty great. ritual.com/DLC. All right. My playlist, I've been playing more Psychonauts 2. I haven't quite finished it yet. Really enjoying that game. We talked about it at length last week. But I have two things I want to talk about that are a little crazy. One of them is super indulgent, and I feel a little guilty bringing up, but I'm going to anyway because it may be interesting to some. Frequent listeners of the show know that I just moved to Denver, and in transit, I had to send my, because I do this for a living, I needed a computer. And we didn't know when our stuff was going to arrive. So I had to send a computer via FedEx. And my beautiful ultra-wide gaming monitor arrived broken, completely shattered.
Oh, no.
Oh, my
God. Yes. Gosh. It was very frustrating and heartbreaking. And the only way I could get over my grief was that I just purchased, was spending way more money than I should have. The Samsung Neo G9, which is an absurdly priced but incredible, super ultra wide. This is the 32x9 massive ultra wide screen. I'm looking at it now because it is my. Yeah, no, you got to see this thing. It looks like it's obscene. It's obscene how wide it is. My mom is here. My son's birthday today, and my mom is in town. And she came walking in, and she like spit her water out when she saw it. She's like, "What is the name of it?"
I'm looking it up online. Samsung. Yeah.
32. It's obscene.
What is it?
It's called the Samsung Odyssey Neo G9. Yeah, don't look at the price because it's ridiculous.
It's so funny because I saw your playlist and I was like, "Oh, I'll pipe this in and see what fun game this is."
Yeah,
and I was like, "Oh my."
Yeah, I got the ultrawide monitor a couple years ago, and I got super into ultrawide. Talked about it a lot on the show. Like, I love games that support ultrawide, but now, you guys, I'm into super ultrawide because there are a small but growing number of games that support this wacky resolution that's like 5120 by 1440 or something insane. It's 32:9 aspect ratio. Which, like, you know, a regular TV is like 16:9. So this is double that. Whoa. It's like having two 16:9 monitors stuck together with seamless. And there are some games that support it, like Destiny 2. And so I reinstalled Destiny 2 just to check it out on this monitor. I'm here to tell you, it is insane. Insane, because I mean, it's as close to playing Destiny in VR as you can get. I mean, in some ways it's better than VR because the field of view in VR headsets is so limited. Here, my entire periphery is taken up by Destiny.
Does it ever feel fish eye?
It is. I mean, the screen has
looking at pictures of it, and it's like, it's so big, it's silly.
It's so curvy.
It's super curved. It's like crazy curved. It's like I'm being hugged by my monitor all the time.
It looks comforting, yeah.
No, yeah. Jeff, have you ever seen those like gaming chairs that are like the scorpion, and it's like a full thing? That's like you're one step away.
I am one step away, yeah. In my defense, I called Tim Geddes from Kind of Funny because I know he had one. And when I was like, I had to replace my monitor. I did not want to do this.
His hands were tied, everyone. He had to buy this.
I talked to Tim and I was like, Tim, is it worth it? And he just wrote me, he texted me back. He's like, buy it. And I was like, well, I can't not do that now.
He made you do it.
Yeah.
So Tim, you weren't gonna.
Yeah. I didn't want to. I spent like $100 to ship my monitor here. So I wouldn't have to.
I do want to get an ultra wide monitor. I just have my one. I usually have two, but it's a whole thing. But I currently only have one and I feel like I need something bigger.
Well,
should I get it?
I highly recommend an ultra wide. I
mean, the answer is buy it.
Yeah.
The answer is, let me pay that forward and say buy it. No, I mean, I don't know if you need to go this crazy, because this is crazy, but like a good ultra wide monitor, I think you can get for, you know, less than $1,000. And it really changes the way you experience a game. And, It's good for productivity because you have, you know, you have windows everywhere. You can
your brain can see windows open at once.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what you mean. I was like, because your brain can't see literally anything else.
Like
in the
room. Put like four things across there and be like happy. You can have so many screens available, just boom, 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 and be like, think you're in Mission Impossible and like have widgets.
Exactly.
I want to live that life.
That's what I'm doing right now. I got you guys in one window. I got 14 windows open.
Then you have
it's amazing.
Zencastr being like,
ha-ha. Yeah.
I'll show you. Doesn't matter what your technology is.
My favorite thing about these websites that I like, because you have it, and now because nobody's ever around for me to be like, okay, but is this real? So on websites like this for monitors, it is always trying to tell you like, this is the difference between it. So it's like, okay, I can see that it's curvier. That's like a visual difference I can see. But scrolling down on the thing I can find, it shows like some random sample video game and like a split. And one of them says 120 hertz, 5 milliseconds. And one says 240 hertz, 1 millisecond. And it's like clearly the same image and somebody like Photoshopped it kind of jostly and blurry. And the other is crystal clear. I want to, like, it's like some like,
I don't know what website you're on, but it's hilarious.
No matter. I'm on Samsung.com. Oh, so like no matter what, they're trying to show me how good this monitor is going to look. But I'm looking
at it
Samsung
tell you
my monitor.
Yeah, Samsung is the wrong people to ask about whether their monitor is
good. Yeah, but I want you to tell me if you feel like this is the difference.
It's
like, is this an accurate visual representation for somebody who
doesn't?
That's
how they feel in their heart, you know? Like, this is what it looks like to us.
Yeah, that's what I feel. It's an artist's representation of how my heart feels. I'm playing Destiny 2 at 120 hertz, which means, you know, 120 frames per second in HDR in this like sick 32:9 resolution, and it is transcendent. I mean, it like makes me want to play Destiny. I'm like, maybe I should become a Destiny 2 player now. Like, it's so. So sick. It's like it's all around me. It's gorgeous. I mean, I highly recommend it. I wish I could say Samsung paid for this promotion, but they did not. It's pretty amazing. And there's definitely a part of me that feels very guilty about getting this monitor because it's like way
Samsung. You should offset that and send me one.
Yeah. Send Michelle one.
Yes. I will be I'm an artist myself by trade. And so I'll be able to tell you if your artist rendition is an accurate depiction.
Yes.
Yeah. Let my stupid purchase allow both of you to get some free stuff. That would make me
great.
Very happy.
That'd be great. It'd be worth it.
The other thing I want to mention is, like I said, it was my son's fifth birthday today.
Happy birthday.
Happy
birthday.
Yeah,
it's his golden birthday because it's September 5th.
Oh, my goodness.
And so he turned 5 on September 5th. Anyway, he is, as I've mentioned on the show numerous times, he is super into Super Mario right now. We had a Super Mario themed birthday.
Oh.
He's all about Super Mario and everything Mario all the time. Mario and Lego. So it was like a Mario Lego party. Anyway, one of the things I got him for his birthday was the Mario Kart Live Home Circuit. Have you guys heard of this product?
What is this?
Put like the sensors around your house?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
It's so cool. I was very skeptical about how well it would work, but it's a little remote control car, a little Mario Kart, you know, replica Mario Kart, and it has a camera on it mounted on the top. And you download software for the Switch, and then it comes with these big cardboard standy things that look like, you know, racing, what do they call them? You know, like a banner, you know, a banner that you would go through that tells you lap one, lap two, that kind of thing. And it's got four of them, and you set them up around your house. You just place them anywhere you want, but in order. And then you drive the little car through them in a specific pattern, and it remembers the pattern you drove and creates a course, a virtual course from your house inside the game.
Amazing. Oh, wow.
And so you're controlling it like you would be controlling Mario Kart, the video game, but you're controlling a real car that's driving through your real house, and you see the real live video of your house and, like, you know, your mom's ankles and the bottoms of the chair and everything. And it's like zooming through all that stuff, but it's also dynamically in real time adding graphics and other characters that you're racing against and stuff. So you're literally like creating a course in your house and making it like this virtual experience. And it really works. It's pretty great.
So you're letting your kid drive a go-kart through your house?
Well, no. It's tiny. It's like a little remote control car.
Oh, okay, because I was like imagining it like one of those cars they sit in, and I'm like, wait, how good a house do you have?
That would be amazing.
Wow, Colorado, huh?
That would be amazing. Yeah, on my palatial estate, you know, my son, with my ultra-wide monitor. I'm living the life now. It's about 5 inches long.
It's like a little remote control thing.
Yeah, with like a tiny little USB camera on it, and so it's like tiny scale. So the only downside is it does not do well on carpet. So we have some hardwood in like our kitchen.
Always the downfall of remote control over the years.
So it has to like exist in that part of the house, which is a bit of a bummer. But it's pretty great. I mean, it was instant delight on my son's face, like the idea of setting things up and you know, it's fun when you're looking at the Switch driving it, and then the camera or the car comes around and you see yourself from a different angle. Yeah. You know, it's that strange thing.
Cool.
It's pretty slick. I would recommend it. It was on sale on Amazon for a while, for like $50 or $60, something like that.
I'm totally gonna look that up for my nephew. Would really like that.
Mario Kart Live Home Circuit is what it's called.
I'm sure my sister will really appreciate it. Like, you just set up these four things around the house.
Yeah, exactly.
And then let him tear around
cardboard thing
with a car.
Yeah. Anyway, so
that sounds awesome. That's fun for a 5-year-old too. He must be like losing his mind.
Oh, dude, the idea that that's like normal for him, you know, right? That's the baseline of what things are possible.
Played Mario when I was not even his age, because that wasn't a thing yet. When I was like 10, I remember like I had to like press pause on the game and then like hope that nobody like turned the Nintendo off so that I would lose my game. Right. You know, touch me, like leave little signs like do not turn off.
Right, right. I'll lose everything.
Like, oh no, the game's gonna like burn into the screen. Remember that?
Yeah, into your CRT monitor. Yeah. You're like, no, mom. It's 32.9.
He's just like, I can just like record my racetrack real quick. That's crazy.
It's wild. It's cool how the game does it too. It tells you, like, you know, it says set up your things wherever you want. And it's like, okay, now we're gonna record the course. And a little character comes on and like pours paint on the wheels. And so it's like, okay, drive wherever you want, and we'll paint the course. And so you can do like figure eights and however you want it to work.
Fun.
And that's the course that it'll build in, you know, virtually in the
game. And then you can play with your own characters in the game as if it's a course. That's so cool.
Yeah. And then it works like Mario Kart. So you're like unlocking new cars and unlocking costumes and stuff by winning.
So
and
cool.
It's got bad guys that are throwing stuff at you and trying to beat you. And you can, you know, it'll generate the, the big question mark blocks that you can drive through and get an item and then you can activate that. I mean, it works like Mario Kart, but
does it save? Like, can you be like, okay, like you have like a certain number of levels that you can save, or is it like every time you want to play one, you have to build a new course?
I think it'll save as long as you don't move. I mean, we haven't experienced that because we keep having to move the thing. I mean, it was just today that we got it, so we haven't done a ton of it, but you know, you can't like, or we don't have the luxury of being able to leave it all set up. So I'm sure. Oh,
I was thinking like you'd be able to save it. So you could always play the digital version of that race. Like you don't need to, but you always are driving the car around.
There's no way to play the digital version without the car moving.
Gotcha.
It doesn't let you just play it as a video game.
Got it.
It's always connected to the car.
Cool.
Yeah. But it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. You got to stick around because we do have parting gifts coming up. But Michelle Morrow, thank you for being here. It's always so much fun talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
I love this podcast.
Oh, thank you. Tell folks where they can keep up with you and all the cool stuff that you do online.
You can find me on Instagram or Twitter at Michelle Morrow. Michelle's with one L.
Awesome. Very cool.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it. Done. Moving on.
Yay, COVID.
Lana Bashinsky, thank you for being here as well and filling in for Christian. I can't imagine anyone would want him back.
Oh, wow. Well, I have no comments. You know, Christian, I hope you enjoy your vacation. Take as long as you want, boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so people can find me online on Twitter. I am at Latienii. That's Latienii. But also this upcoming Friday, I will be speaking at the Lightbox Expo, which is totally free on behalf of Riot and the Riot Animation Team community, the RAT. We'll be at RAT Animators on Twitch from 12 noon Pacific time to 4 p.m. And we will be doing some demo reel reviews. I will be giving a talk answering what is the one most important thing I think of in my role as an animator today, and doing AMA. So come join us then.
And you're going to say me, right? Think about what would Jeff think?
That's exactly it.
What's the most important thing I think of as my role as an animator? What Jeff Cannata would think.
But I wonder how Jeff Cannata would enjoy this. What would he say on DLC? And would it be cool enough to even bring to like the other podcasts he does? That's the one thing I think about. Talk over. So yeah. I guess don't come. So it's done.
Talk over.
Got it here.
sorry to spoil the whole talk for everybody.
No, I think it's going to be really interesting, actually, just to take like this much more time, because there's eight of us. And as we're talking about what we're going to discuss, I sort of asked that question of everybody, and everybody answered that question differently across eight people on different
teams. That's awesome.
So I think it's going to be really interesting. So if you're interested in game development and specifically animation and game development, please come hang out with us. It's on Twitch.
And when is that again? To the date?
It's Friday, September 10th.
Oh, cool.
From 12 to 4.
Very, very cool. You can always follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. I've got a bunch of other shows for you to check out. If you want to hear me talk about movies and TV shows, you can hear me talk about that on The Filmcast, which you can find wherever you get podcasts. This week, we're talking about Shang-Chi, The Legend of the Ten Rings, which is real good.
So good.
Yeah. And I also do a comedy science show called We Have Concerns. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com. You can learn something and laugh along the way. It's good times. And my tabletop role-playing game show, my D&D show, it's called The Dungeon Run. You can find that at twitch.tv/thedungeonrun or on Twitter, or excuse me, on YouTube or as an audio podcast. So lots of ways to enjoy that show. Just search for The Dungeon Run on those platforms. You can also email us here at the show at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. Any of your comments, questions, anything you'd like to relay our way, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Oh, no. Why would it do that? It's so weird, man. That's the only That's the only one of those that it does that to. I don't know why. It's going to be a fun night of editing.
The first time I heard that, I was like catching up on DLC in my car, and it started playing that way, and I had to like pull over because I was crying laughing. I don't know why I didn't get
it. It's so weird. It's the only one of these that it does that to. Yeah. All right, I'll try again. Michelle, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I do. I don't know if you guys have already talked about this on the podcast or not, but I watched Suicide Squad last night and it was awesome. And I recommend everybody watch it. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
Tonight is the last night it's playing on HBO Max, which is Sunday the 5th. But you can still get it online. And I highly recommend it. I had so much fun. I thought it was like if Guardians of the Galaxy was super gory, like The Boys, and it has just like a really, like, it's just so fun. The cast is perfect. The music is great. Of course, James Gunn. So it's a lot of fun.
I totally agree. I laughed my butt off in that movie. Yeah. I thought it was so fun. Yeah.
And you know, and the action is fantastic. Like the writing is fantastic. Like all of it is good. And I really love Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn. She's perfect.
She's so great. Yeah.
She's perfect.
I was saying that I think that it sets a new record for most improved sequel. Mm. Like the first Suicide Squad, in my opinion, was so bad. And it's like, this one is so much better than the first.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, I don't know. I just think it's a great time. So definitely check it out.
Excellent. That's the Suicide Squad. And it's streaming on HBO Max, at least for a short while longer. Lana,
you can get it on iTunes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's true, too. Lana, what is your parting gift?
Well, keeping with the old superhero theme, I talked a little bit about this on Twitter, but Marvel's What If? I don't know if this is a parting gift already. I love it.
So good, right?
I really expected that it would be like, oh, I'm watching this because I'm an animator, so I feel compelled to watch animated things that are new. But everything about it, it really, Marvel's tone, I think, throughout any of this MCU stuff really holds up. I think they have a really solid, funny, serious, compelling, engaging voice that they use throughout all of this MCU stuff that I love, and it carries over really well into the show. Like the voice acting cast is primarily the voice act, like the actual actors from the films, which is great. So the first two episodes, I was like, wow, somebody's doing a great impression. I'm like, oh, no, it's just the actual person. But the stories are also really interesting and fun and quick, like 20-30 minutes an episode, really fun. Marvel's What If on Disney Plus.
And the animation is great, right?
It's so good.
I love the animation. I'm so impressed with that.
I think the style is fantastic. Stephen Frank, I believe, is the animation director, and he did the Iron Giant. So I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it's really good. My parting gift is a new series, I believe is on Hulu. It is called Only Murders in the Building. Have either of you guys watched this yet?
No, but I've heard about it from like six friends. Everyone being like, you gotta see this.
So good.
It's a series?
It's a series. Yeah. There's only three episodes so far, but new episodes on Tuesdays. And it stars, Selena Gomez, Martin Short, and Steve Martin. And and I thought, okay,
it's like the three amigos.
I love Martin Short. I love Steve Martin. I'm assuming it's going to be kind of wacky and kind of dated humor, and it's going to be these two old guys and they're young, this young girl. And I was like, I'm in just because I like those guys, but I didn't expect it to be great. It's great. It's not like that at all. It's so interesting. It's a murder mystery. The premise is, there's these three people that live in this building in New York. They're all obsessed with true crime murder podcasts. Okay. And then a murder happens in their building. And so they want to launch their own podcast.
Oh,
and,
my God.
And,
amazing.
But it's so smart. Like the mystery is interesting. Their interactions are interesting. It's got this kind of magical realism where I'm so enamored with this show. I just think it's brilliant and I'm hooked. I was hooked from episode one. It's great.
Interesting. This sounds good.
It's great. Yeah. Only Murders in the Building. Highly, highly recommend it.
On Hulu.
I look forward to it.
We also got a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to us from Eric T. from Chicago. Eric writes, the past 18 months have been grim and exhausting, so I think we've all found ourselves lost in our hobbies, whether they be lifelong passions or something new we picked up out of sheer boredom. One of my quarantine deep dives that I still keep up with week to week now is the YouTube channel of freelance rapper Harry Mack. Harry Mack is a freestyle rapper who lives in LA, who made a name for himself walking around the city, particularly Venice Beach, freestyling about pedestrians passing him by and with random strangers who would throw him buzzwords. During the pandemic, he pivoted to the digital space, just like the rest of us, and instead of going out and interacting with strangers in person, took to one of the darkest corners of the internet in Omegle, the video chat randomizer website that puts you in a video call with random strangers upon request. What results are the most wholesome, exciting, and truly jaw-dropping videos. This guy's brain does not work like that of a normal person. His ability to string along improvised bars nonstop while factoring in parts of a conversation that just happened and calling out little things and reactions as they happen in real time is nothing short of remarkable. His pure skill aside, Harry is the most positive, wholesome, and humble dude, always trying to bring the best energy possible to these interactions to truly wow these strangers and make their day. There are moments of pure hype, moments that can provide a good laugh, as well as moments that are very poignant and candidly deep and moving. It always helps, too, that the beats he raps over are fire. It's called the Omegle Bars series on his YouTube channel, and I'd recommend it to anyone who is looking for entertaining stuff to watch on YouTube. You don't even need to be a fan of rap to be blown away by his ability and demeanor. Really appreciate hanging with you, too, every week. All the best. Thank you, Eric.
Fascinating.
I had an opportunity. I mean, seeing this email come in, I went and checked out Harry Mack's channel. Eric is not exaggerating. It is highly entertaining, completely amazing, and truly heartwarming. Like he meets these people that are randomly, and he'll be like, "Hey, could I just rap for you?" And they're like, oh, "I guess." He's like, "Give me three random things to rap about," and then he proceeds to blow their minds. It's really cool. So I highly recommend, I'll add to Eric's recommendation, Harry Mack on YouTube.
I've got it pulled up now and I just subscribed to him. So I remember to do it.
You're going
to
dig it. It's just impressive how he's able to just, he'll be rapping and he'll like work in the words that they want. And then they'll like scratch their face or put their hands on their face and he'll be like, "And you put your hands on your face." He's like, but rapping and doing, it's incredible. He's like, it's amazing. Anyway,
I was kind of just watching a little clip of it. And it was actually really good.
You're going to dig it. It's, yeah, I went down a rabbit hole last night. I was like, this is incredible. Anyway, if you'd like to have your parting gift read on the show, send it to us to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Michelle Morrow and Lana Bashinsky for being with me. I really appreciate it. It's been so much fun. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for making those fun bumpers. And thanks to each and every one of you who download the show and give us your time. We appreciate it, and we'll be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.